Welcome to episode 21 of Confessions of a Casting Director, where you will hear advice, wisdom, and true stories from inside the audition room. I'm your podcast host, Jen Rudin. So today's episode features a live recording from the June 3rd, 2020 Free Wednesdays with Jen, my bi-weekly parent and young actor chats. Our next chat is Wednesday, June 17th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can sign up at jenrudincasting.com. So yesterday I chatted with Dana Geyer, who shared amazing stories, advice, and wisdom from her voiceover career. Dana is best known for her voiceover work as Edith in the Despicable Me franchise. You may also know her as Sahar in Netflix's hit show On My Block. Dana hails from New Jersey and graduated in 2019 from UCLA with a major in communication studies and a minor in film, television, and digital media studies. Dana currently lives in LA, working and auditioning in the entertainment industry. Please welcome my friend Dana Geyer to the podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wednesdays at 2 with Jen Rudin from Jen Rudin Casting. It is so nice to see everybody. So we have been doing these weekly chats since the pandemic began. Our first chat was March 16th. Now we're doing them every other week, but we are still connecting and communicating with each other, and it is great to see everybody. I know that we are in the middle of a very, very challenging time, so I do want to take a moment to acknowledge the world at large, and we're all hoping and praying for some peace soon and good health for everybody. So I just wanted to say that before I begin the presentation. So I'm Jen Rudin, casting director and author of Confessions of a Casting Director, which is also a popular podcast. There's 20 episodes available for you wherever you get your podcast fix. And as you know, I take these Wednesdays with Jen and I turn them into future podcast episodes. It's been so fun to host the podcast. Now during quarantine is a great time to read Confessions of a Casting Director. If you haven't already, I've been a casting director, as you all know, for about 20 years, including 7 years at the Walt Disney Company. Some of my favorite casting credits include such beloved animated movies like Brother Bear, The Incredibles, Chicken Little and the Wild, and Meet the Robinsons, The Princess and the Frog. I've won 2 Artios Awards for casting, one for The Princess and the Frog and one for Chicken Little, and been nominated for many more. Here are some other projects I've worked on. The Lorax, which actually was for Illumination, the Despicable Me producers, Rock Dog, Frank and Weenie, Peter Rabbit, projects for Amazon and Disney and Pixar and Lionsgate and Netflix and Riot Games. So a lot of great projects over the past 20 years. Since March, I've been teaching a bunch of Zoom classes, all at reduced prices during the challenging period. We've had over 200 young actors participating in our classes. Here are some fun photos from our recent level 1, level 2, level 3 voiceover classes that all took place this weekend. Happy kids, lots of Instagram love. These kids know how to do Instagram more than I do. We had our first level 3 animation class, and you can see these smiling, happy young actors who enjoyed it so much. Classes are continuing for June and July, and boy, they are filling up fast. So take a look at JenRudin.com/coaching classes and sign up for your classes there. You can also reach out to me for any private coaching that you need, anything, parent coaching, monologues, animation, voiceover. I am offering 15-minute, 30-minute, 45-minute, 1 hour, whatever you guys need. And you can now schedule everything on JenRudinCasting.com. So it's very exciting. Okay, today, yes, I'm so excited for our special guest, Dana Geyer, who has really lived the dream life by voicing the role of Edith in the Despicable Me franchise. And we are going to chat more with Dana in just a minute. Dana is from Livingston, New Jersey. And of course, you know her from Despicable Me. She's also Sahar in Netflix's show On My Block. She just graduated from UCLA and has also worked as a freelance casting assistant and helped me out on stuff. And she's currently in LA. So it is the morning for Dana. it is the afternoon for us. And Dana, I am coming to pin your video. So again, if you have just joined our meeting, please mute your audio, mute your video, And ladies and gentlemen, ooh, what's happening? Okay, there. That was somebody's got a, somebody was, here we go. Okay, there she is, everybody. There's Dana Geyer. Good morning, Dana. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being a guest for us. So I have a bunch of questions that I have prepared for this very formal discussion. I also want to open it up in the last couple minutes and we will do some chatting. Okay. Dana, you seriously, you know, have lived the dream because so many people dream of being an animated character, a voice in an animated project. And of course, I always think it's so easy. So give us the backstory. Tell us the origin story. How did it happen?
Well, I started acting because my sister started acting. And like, I was brought in for an audition where she had the audition. And I was just, my mom couldn't find a babysitter. And so I went in for the audition and it was actually like for sisters. So they asked me to go in also. And
how old were you when this happened?
I want to say like 9 or 10. And I ended up going in with her and I ended up getting a call back. And so my sister's agency wanted to sign with me and they were like, we got to get you into doing some voiceover stuff. And I was like, voiceover, like, what does that even mean?
Okay. But hold on 1 second. How did your sister feel when you got the call back and she didn't? Was that okay?
It was totally fine. I mean, my mom always taught us to take every audition as an experience. And when you walk out, like, that's that. And like, that was a great experience. And because also it wasn't really for the same part, like I was going in for like the younger sister and she was going in for the older sister. We just were able to rationalize, well, clearly what they were looking for in you isn't something they were looking for in me. And also we look nothing alike. So we look a little bit alike, but not as much as sisters often do.
Well, you guys are good sisters because at one point my sister wanted to be auditioning too, like me. And I was like, no, this is my world. You're the violin and I'm the actor. But that was just, you know,
I think I always wonder if I would have acted as lovely as she did if the roles were reversed. But yeah, I ended up going in for voiceover auditions because I had this raspy texture to my voice. But I never thought that I would be like a voice in anything. You think about acting and you think some just automatically about the people that you see on your television screens, especially when you're that young. But I went in for some voiceover auditions. And then actually my first voiceover film audition was for Despicable Me. And
was that in person?
No, that was at just at my agency at Abrams.
That's Avery, right. Because back in the day, you know, if you didn't come in for the casting director, you went to your agent's office and you did the recording right in their booth with the booth director. Okay.
Exactly.
And so what year is this now for your very first audition for Despicable Me?
2000 and let's see.
Like 9?
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe. Yeah. It was like December-ish.
So you went in and you did this audition and were you like, all right, whatever, I got to go to school tomorrow?
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about it. And it was the kind of thing too, where I knew nothing about the project because it was so top secret at the time. They were calling it either Project D or Project D. I can't really remember, but they used fake sides and like, I knew nothing about the project at this point. So I went in and I did these sides and I walked out and I was just like, all right, like soccer tomorrow, this, that, you know, and then 2 weeks later, my mom got a call and they were like, we're gonna either fly her out to LA and do kind of a work session callback situation, or we're gonna do it via Skype in New York. I like didn't even remember what audition it was for.
Sure.
Just because I was like, you know, I had pushed it so far out of my mind, and 2 weeks later, you know, you would think you would have heard something by then or something, but you really never know. So I just, we found out that I was being flown to LA and I was really, really excited. And I did this work session and I was so nervous. I remember I kept playing with the bottom of my sweater and the microphone was picking it up. And I had never worked with like a microphone that amplifies every sound like that.
Wait, so hold on. Cause I've worked with Illumination on the Lorax. Were you at Universal Studios when you did this or were some random office building? I mean, this is very
exciting. I was at this place called LA Studios, which
is
on Cahuenga.
Yes, of course. Spent many an hour there.
Which is so weird because it's so strange because that's the place that I walked into and I did this. And obviously I had no concept of Los Angeles at this point. I was 11. I was like, I went to this place and it was in LA. But now like for the third movie, they brought me there for my first recording session. And I walked in and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's hadn't been there since. It's very surreal feeling.
Well, it's interesting about LA Studios, because when I was at Disney Feature Animation, we had one recording studio and it was always in use for whatever movie we were making at the time. So mm-hmm. I spent months and months and years at LA Studios, specifically on The Wild. And it was really fun because I'd be like, oh, there's Jeffrey Katzenberg and Jack Black. They're down the hall doing, you know, Madagascar or whichever one he was doing. And oh, look, there's the Nickelodeon people. They're here too. And it was always fun in that kitchen because we'd see a bunch of people. Yes. And even though we were all making competing projects, that was the place. And I still try to go there when I can. So let's backtrack. You go for this callback. Mm-hmm. You're at LA Studios. Then what? You fly back to New York. And how long, like, what was the moment when Bonnie Shimofsky, your amazing voiceover agent, called you, Bonnie, who's now at Stuart Talent, called you to tell you the news? Tell us about that moment, because this is the moment, Dana, that we love in casting and that you love as an actor.
Oh yeah, I will never forget that moment. And it's actually even a little more special than that, because it happened right after I walked out of the session. And like, that never happens. Wow. So I walked out. And I was supposed to take a break just based on hours and everything like that. And I went to the kitchen to go get a snack or this, whatever. And then they come up to me and they're like, Dana, we're so sorry. And I was like, oh, but like, I would be okay, obviously. They were like, we're so sorry, but you're going to have to stay here all day because we want you to record the role. And I was so, so excited. And it was just like, I remember I like was jumping up and down, like the little girl that I was. And it was just this really crazy moment. I didn't expect them to come up to me and tell me whether or not I got the role that day.
And that's so, and so are you 10?
Yeah, I think I was 10 or 11.
So what's so interesting is that usually what ends up happening is, you know, we do the callback, we have to circle back right with the executives, we have to cut what we call in casting, cut to picture Dana's voice, cut to the picture of Edith to make sure that it sounds, you know, right, or with the sisters, who we'll talk about, you, the girls that played your sisters. But the fact that that happened is like, right, it's like a Hollywood story, but like a very old, really old-fashioned one. And your mom was there, I'm assuming she was sitting in the lobby or something.
Yeah, she was with me, and I had a cold the night before, and I remember sitting at like a CPK with her, like crying because I was like sick, and I was like, there's no way I'm gonna get this role, like not with the way I sound. And she looked at me, and she doesn't like to, you know, make me feel, I guess, she doesn't feel like I'm definitely in the role, but she always wants to make me feel confident. And she looked at me and she was like, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter. And so when she was standing there next to me, I think I was just like squeezing her hand or something. It was just really, really exciting. Like I had to go do like my schooling, and I just couldn't stop like giggling. I was like, this isn't real. Yeah.
And then did you go back to New York or New Jersey and then do the rest of the records remotely from New York?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and how many for the first movie did you have in total?
Ooh, I don't, maybe, usually it comes out to about 5. And that's including, because just toward the end, you know how it is, obviously you record the full movie, at least that's how they did it for Despicable Me, and then they come back with some wild lines or some alt lines, things like that. And
did you record, so most people, let's talk about the actual recording session, which I always say, I like to quote Kiefer Sutherland, because he was a lion for us in The Wild, and he was recording and it was 4 hours and he stopped and had an In-N-Out burger, and then we had to have him do more animal sounds of as the lion, and he said, yep, it's a living, meaning this is a kind of a tedious way to make a movie, because you're in these sessions for so long and you're essentially by yourself. Did you record all of them by yourself?
Yeah, and that's what people, I think, don't understand. And I remember reading like an article about Tom Hanks and how like Toy Story is some of the most difficult work he's done, is because, you know, they always talk about how acting is reacting. But when you're in the booth alone, you're really alone, and you have to manifest that energy and that emotion kind of out of nowhere, or just get yourself into it and be able to do that.
What were your tricks? I mean, was it apples? Is it sugar? Was it water? Was it that jumping up and down and doing 5 jumping jacks? I mean, obviously you're so talented and so disciplined as an actor, but to sustain that, to keep that momentum going, because I've sat in them and I've voice directed myself and I'm like, this is excruciating. We're doing it 5 times in a row, 5 different ways, circle that one. That's the take. So take us through like, what was your process for those recording sessions?
I think for most of them, and still today, it really comes down to like adrenaline for me and how just excited I am to be in the room and how energetic I feel because of that. But I'm constantly chugging water because I do have that low raspy tone. And so that will start to crack sometimes if I'm like doing a lot of yelling, which in animation, it's very animated. You know, sometimes it gets to that point. We have to save the screaming to the end every time.
That's right.
I used to not be able to like giggle on cue. Like that was something that my mom had to walk over and tickle me for. Otherwise I just couldn't, I didn't know how to like fake laugh. Like I couldn't do that genuinely. Now I do a better job of it, but yeah, I remember her having to come. I remember being a little embarrassed about that, but I was only 11. So.
Because also I always say to my students, certainly, and we've got like a bunch of them who are attending today's session with you that I was just working with over the past couple of months. And it's like, when we hire a voice actor, we expect you to do all the incidentals, all the giggling, all the efforts, all the this and the that. And, you know, Eddie Izzard is the koala bear in the wild and he's running in a tunnel, all of that. So now you have those tricks. Take us to the opening night. So you're there at the red carpet in LA, I'm assuming. And tell us about the moment when you first saw heard yourself in the movie to cut to Edith, or did they show you animated sequences as the years went on?
What they did is at one point I went out to LA, and this was maybe in 2010 when the movie was about to come out, but not quite, it wasn't quite ready yet. So they put me in a movie theater with a few others and like Miranda Cosgrove. And they were like, this is how it is right now. And it wasn't even finished. Like there were some sequences that were like half animated and like the mouth wasn't moving yet. But it was one of the most bizarre things. Like I still think about it. I'll like lay in bed at night and I'll be like, remember when my voice came out of like that little blonde person? And I'm like, ooh, like it makes me like shake. It's like I kind of have to detach when I'm watching it. Like the first Despicable Me was on the other day and like I heard myself and like I just remembered what it was like to be 11 and be recording those lines. And I could not stop laughing. Like I was just like, wow, this was so long ago. Like I would never have imagined the life that I would be leading after this. And it's just kind of weird to think about it all.
And also, Dana, the fact that it had so many sequels, and because, you know, there's no guarantee when you are a voice, in an animated, that they'll even keep you through the duration of the project. I mean, sadly, some of my sad days in casting are when I've had to make those phone calls and call people and tell them that they're no longer going to be the voice. It's one thing when a boy's voice changes and we need to replace Peter Rabbit because now he's 13 and we need a 7-year-old, but it's really, so the fact that you were able, that they kept you and that you did all of the iterations of the project is really tremendous to both your talent and also the fact that the Illumination folks, having worked with them, they know what they're doing. They're very clear on their story. I worked with Janet Healy on The Lorax. Those are good.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, so let's talk for a minute about this incredible voice cast. So Miranda Cosgrove is kind of famous. So were you like, I can't believe, because she's iCarly, right?
I mean, I was even like a fan for that. Like I was a huge Drake and Josh gal. That was like one of my favorite shows. I mean, honestly, still kind of is today. It's just a great show for kids. And iCarly, I loved iCarly too, and that was just a really weird scenario when I was just like, oh my god, she's playing my
and when did like, you and Miranda meet? When did you meet? At the premiere?
We met first time that I saw the movie when it was kind of unfinished, and she was really sweet, and she was like, you did such a great job, and like her saying that to me is like, I may have been 12 at that point, was just like the coolest thing ever, because I was like, wow, this is someone that I look up to who works in the industry that I want to work in. And she's saying this to me and she's really encouraging.
And then Elsie Fisher, who of course would later break out as the star of Eighth Grade, was also the other little girl. And that's really sweet because for a long time she was just doing voiceover, right?
Right. Yeah. She is, I mean, she is one of the sweetest, coolest girls you will ever meet. I mean, she, when we were young, she was 5 years old when the first movie came out, when the first movie started. And I remember like meeting her at that first session because she was also there and we were all eating lunch together or something. And she asked me to like play with her, but I had to go do schooling. And she was just like the tiniest little thing. And like on the carpet, like she was so nervous. She walked around holding my hand.
Oh, I mean, love that.
And it's crazy just watching, like, we watched her grow up, essentially.
Yeah. And what about, I mean, so Steve Carell, Russell Brand, Julie Andrews, Will Arnett. I mean, this is a major group of people. So it must have been a little, but you must have been a bit bedazzled at that first opening night.
I mean, at the premiere, I saw Steve, and I was a huge, huge fan of him. And so was everyone in my family. And I saw him, and he kind of, they wanted to get pictures of me and him together. And he kind of like stopped the cameras and he was like, hang on a second. And he looked at me and he was like, it is so nice to finally meet you. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Right. Because they'd probably been showing him all of the clips as well of the three girls. And that he was like, wow, yeah. You know, he felt like he knew you. So, you know, that's all the exciting stuff. And we've talked sort of about the duration of these recording sessions and how freaking difficult it is. So now I kind of want to get into the nitty gritty, you know, what do you, cause my phone rings or my email dings with somebody every day being like, I want to get into voiceover. I need a demo? What do I need to do? So what do you think people should know before they try to break into this very competitive profession? Now you're a natural with that texture. It's what we call texture and casting. And like, you're either born with it or you're not. But I mean, what's right. your advice? Cause I'm sure everybody wants you to help them or give them advice. What can you tell us? And you can be honest, cause it is a hard profession.
Well, I'm definitely honest about the way that I got into it because I was very, very lucky. I always say that. I think that a lot of it, obviously it comes down to talent, but a lot of it comes down to luck, especially when you're as young as I was. And I don't necessarily do like voices. Like some people are really good at like, you know, making their voice like super, super high and sound very, very different. And my voice is my voice. And I've been very successful and lucky with the Despicable Me franchise, but I haven't worked on other voiceover projects besides that. And that's just due to the fact that they're either going to love your voice or they're going to not want to use your voice, you know? And that's something that you just can't take personally. And it's very, very cutthroat because it's like, even when you're on screen acting, like if I send in a self-tape of myself, there are all these other factors that come into play. They're not just like isolating my voice. They're like, does she have the right look? Can she do this? Can she do that? But for voiceover, it's really isolating that one aspect. And it's also just like, it has to be a more elevated form of acting, but it also has to still feel genuine.
That's right.
So there's that element of it too.
Authenticity is really key, especially with a feature animated movie like The Incredibles or, yeah, you know, I don't want to say Chicken Little because that was a bit more animated, but it has to sound. So with The Incredibles, I always like to tell the story about Holly Hunter. So Holly Hunter was also cast to voice Chicken Little. And so at the time she was the lead in two of our movies. And then Michael Eisner wanted Chicken Little to be voiced by a male voice. And that was a very hard phone call to make. And Holly Hunter's agent was very, you know, it was very sad news. And she was like, well, I love Chicken Little. And I said to him like, well, don't worry. She's going to also be in she's Mrs. Incredible. And it ended up, you know, that one was sort of the most you know, successful, but it's, I like to say that Holly Hunter's voice in The Incredibles, if you closed your eyes, it would seem like it's a live action acting role. Same with Craig T. Nelson and Spencer Fox, one of Bonnie's clients who was our Dash, you know, and that's how it is with features. And obviously it's very different with TV or video games. Here are some fun questions. What was the biggest challenge? Because you probably dreamed and trained for the traditional path of acting on stage. So besides not having your beautiful face to tell the story, what were some of the other challenges in terms of the voice acting?
I would say just getting comfortable and doing something that seems uncomfortable and bringing that authenticity to something that feels so inauthentic, like you just said, because I'll be doing a line and the line will be like, come on. And they'll be like, do it three different ways. And I'll be like, come on, come on, come on. And then they'll be like, okay, take the second one and do it a few more times. And so you don't usually do that stuff when you're on stage or when you're on camera.
In real life.
Three different lines.
Right.
Ways. So about making those, about really just being able to sit in those situations and feeling comfortable doing that. And also kind of making myself think outside the box when it comes to tone of a line, just because maybe, you know, they want all these different tones in the line because they're not sure how the scene is going to play out yet relative to the other characters. So maybe I'm being sassy to Steve Carell, but maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm kind of being a little sweet and insecure, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to really, key into your emotions and also be so quick on the spot when they throw stuff at you to be like, oh, okay. Okay. That was the second take. And you want me to do that one three times in a row. So another question, I mean, what about high school and college? You know, how has that prepared you for the acting career that you're still pursuing? And we'll talk a little bit about some of your casting work that you've done as well. But high school and college in terms of your education.
Well, I mean, I'm of the mindset that just being older and wiser makes you older and wiser, you know? And I mean, not that kids can't be wise or anything like that, but just giving you more life experience, it makes you able to handle more of life situations and also maybe be able to put yourself in the shoes of different life situations just because you have more life experience. Maybe you had a friend who went through this or something like that. And so that gets you through a scene. But for me, I did a lot of theater in high school, and I don't know, I would just say that being able to go to school and meet so many different people and make so many different friends, see so different people's way of life, take so many different classes.
Yeah, so what did you study at UCLA? Tell us about that experience.
I decided to go for communications because I figured I was already acting on the side and I could take more acting classes and supplement my college experience with acting classes outside of school, but I really wanted to go to school for something academic. And so I did study communications and film, and just those classes, they are so much based in learning about the media and different types of media, TV, film, and obviously in my film classes, I was learning about different things like directing, screenwriting, and all of those things very much informed my experience as an actor.
So now you're out of college, and I know over the years, I think you helped me on the Numberlys, that Amazon pilot, which was so sweet. That's back when everybody, you could watch pilots on Amazon and then vote for the ones that should go forward and become TV series. And the Numberlys was this very sophisticated, based on a William Joyce book. And he, of course, we did Meet the Robinsons with Bill Joyce. And it was almost like sort of too intricate, I think, for the preschool world. So it didn't get picked up. But what did it feel like? So I remember when I was out of college and I was like, okay, I'm done auditioning. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go work in casting. And I remember being a casting assistant, my first casting assistant job. And I was still, there was still a part of my heart, Dina, that wanted to be acting. And I remember feeling jealous of the girls coming in for like some American Express National Network commercial. Cause I was like, I want that commercial. So you've worked in casting. You've worked with me in casting. You've worked with Telsey and Company in casting and other places. Like, is it a conflict for you or do you like them both?
I really, really like them both. And as much as I love acting, I would also be happy doing casting because it's just so interesting being on the other side of the table and watching actors. And also because it involves like an element of directing and it's really cool in that way. But I would say I'm able really to detach from being an actor as I work in casting. I mean, it definitely helps me because for instance, when I'm doing something like cutting sides for an audition, I read those back as an actor and how that would make sense to me to read in the room. And I'll be like, oh, well, what if we put a line through this? Because that can maybe be kind of confusing. And sometimes that's very helpful. But in terms of watching other people act and them coming in for roles that maybe could be right for me or something, I am just very much of the mindset that like I am there to work in casting and I have to be there to work in casting. I'm going to commit to that. And I want to just be there and be as helpful as possible and give my full opinion, you know, whether that be great or not so great. And it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, it's not about me, you know?
No, that's good to hear because I'm really mixed. You know, I used to say like that I will have no actors working in my casting office because it's a total conflict. On the flip side, having an actor be the reader for a day of auditions is really wonderful because you're an actor and I can't read with actors and also be videotaping them and directing them or recording them. It's too much for me. But I think if you can separate the two and be like, I am here to be a casting assistant and be of service to the project that we're casting, that's great to hear instead of being like, excuse excuse me, can I please read for the part?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I definitely have my different hats that I put on.
Well, I remember with the number lees, because I was such a stage mom, because we had our director, Saul Blinkoff, with us. And I remember saying to him, like, you were like, let people were signing in. And I was like, do you know, by the way, I mean, she's Edith from Despicable Me. And then by the end of the day, Saul was like, can we have Dana read for the part? And I thought to myself, that's the way it's supposed to happen. It's supposed to be that if the director is interested in you, he or she or they will say at the end of the day, hey, Dana, will you take a look at the sides? But you can never, if you're an actor working in my casting office, you can never, ever, ever be like, hey, can I, nor can you give feedback unless I say, what did you think, Dana? Because that can also be very difficult.
Right. No, I completely agree. And it's like, it's the kind of thing where you just have to know your place. And like, it's like that in every industry, you know?
So Dana, now knowing what you know now, all at the wise age of being, you know, a recent college graduate, and you could think back to 11-year-old Dana, you know, what would be some advice you would give to her? Not just the day she went and joined her sister at the commercial, but through the whole Despicable Me franchise, and all those sessions, and what would you say? And I know this is a very profound, deep question.
No, and it's a great question. I think that people tend to not place as much importance on the arts as they should. Specifically, maybe where I was from, but maybe everywhere. Like, I was from a town in New Jersey that was all about sports and, you know, the acting and the shows and the musical theater and the plays. Like, it just wasn't considered as maybe cool or something like that. And I never stopped doing it because of that, but I wish I would have been more confident in myself, and I wish that I would have been happy of the fact that I'm doing it and not worry about what anyone else is thinking. Because at the end of the day, you're doing what you love and it shouldn't matter what anyone else thinks.
Yeah, better easier also, said than done.
Oh yes, but I also think that artists are the people who change the world. And so take, you know, pride in the fact that you have that sensitivity to do what you do. Like when I moved out to California and I'm in a town where it is all about the arts, I feel like. You know, when I went to high school, my show choir was the number one show choir in the nation. And it was so cool to see a show choir get recognition from the rest of the school as, you know, just with admiration. And so that felt really different, and it feels like we should all just be lifting each other up. And I think that artists are just really special.
That's so nice that you said that, because we had Quinn McCaughan and her mom on, and her mom said, we need to, we were talking about The Waiting Room, you know, which is of course my favorite topic to talk about. And she said, we need to prop each other up and, you know, and help each other along the way, not tear people down. But were people, when the movies came out, I mean, what were the girls like at school? Like, I mean, people's slumber parties were like Despicable Me and then pizza. Like, was it weird for you? Or did everybody just treat you normally?
I think everyone just treated me normally. I think that some people would actually evidently make fun of it, because they just didn't know how to deal with it and deal with me getting the attention. So it was kind of a weird spot, especially because I was in middle school, which can be so, so tough. So it was just this thing where it was like, every time I saw a minion, it was like a weird little thing for me. But I think I was also kind of struggling with those things at the time, with people in my school and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, the girls were, I mean, if I was treated, I just remember, like, I took off some time to do something, I came back, and everyone's like, oh, you think you're so great. And I felt like saying, I'm just like, but it's seventh grade, I'm back here, and I'm having trouble in science class. Like, I'm just right. Like you, you know?
Right, exactly.
Can't we all be nice to each other? But I mean, bullying existed a million years ago, and it still exists now. But I was curious, because to me, I think, if anything, everybody was probably just jealous that, you know, this exciting thing happened in your life and they're busy playing, you know, sports, which is also exciting.
Right, right, right. And in hindsight, you know, that's easier to see and tell, but you know, at the time, maybe it just felt a little more hurtful, but I was still, the thing is though, it's like the fact that I was doing it, like, still gave me so much pride and just made me so happy that I was just like, it doesn't matter what they're saying about it. Like, that's, you know, their own issue.
Exactly.
And that has nothing to do with me. And so that's now, kind of how I looked at it.
Let's talk a little bit about auditions. Because that's obviously Confessions of a Casting Director was written because I wanted to help actors. Working in casting and then auditioning at the same time, you know, what have you learned, whether it's from my book and the 10 copies that are in your house, or from working in busy casting offices, what's your best advice for actors so that they don't screw it up when they get into the audition room?
This is such a good question. I just think you have to go in with yourself in the role, and you shouldn't be worrying, like really, really just worry about the work and like think about what you can bring to the work as opposed to like how the work should be. Like obviously take the direction and everything like that into account that you see in the sides, but like my own experience informs my audition, just like your own experience would inform your audition differently. And that's what's so special about each individual audition. So I think it's important just to stand out by putting yourself into the role and by doing how you think that would be done.
I agree. We are going to start to open this up to questions. Jaden Waldman, I know you had a question. So why don't you, everybody can open up their chat and send a question for me to ask Dana. We are just trying to keep it really, you know, organized here as these meetings get larger. You know, do you slate in character? Do you slate as yourself?
I think that my character informs my slate, like I said, but it's still me. Because I want them to see me during the slate. I want them to see at least a little bit of me. But if I'm supposed to come in as this mean girl, you know, I'm not going to be slating like, hey, I'm dating like the sweetest girl next door. You know, it's because I bring myself into the room as that character as well.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. Were you ever interested in the editing process? I mean, you were watching sort of Edith come together. Does that interest you since you studied film at school?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I took a directing class my senior year, and we just made these 3-minute videos, but the editing itself was so tedious, and just like looking at that and putting it together so the second it could line up was just this really interesting process where I gained so much respect for the people that do it. I mean, so much respect too for the people that do it in animation, because they're editing together these pieces of animation that aren't real movements. So it's the craziest thing.
Yes. My husband is an editor for Dateline on NBC, and he's been working from home for the past, you know, month or two. And it's like, it's really the editor's job as, Emma, oh my gosh, I'm spacing on her last name, British, you know, Nanny McPhee, Emma Thompson says the editor is the final director, because the editor really is putting everything right together. And it's really exciting work. And certainly I've watched the editors at Disney when I was there and watching them clip things together. Okay, we got so many questions. What was the audition process like for On My Block?
Ooh, so I actually was working as an intern at NBC during that time, and I couldn't make the audition, but they said they would accept a self-tape, so I was very happy to do a self-tape. And my mom was reading with me, and my mom's not such a great actor. She's good at, like, recognizing talent, but herself, not so much. And it was just, like, we were reading together, and I did the self-tape, and I sent it in, and the next day I heard that I was pinned for the role, and then I had to wait, like, a week and a half, but then they told me that I got the role, and it was so exciting because that show is super, super special.
Yeah. And pinned means, you know, that they like put a pin in it. Like, we were interested in her. So what does she have going on? Is she going off on a vacation? We need to know. Okay. Did you develop a lot of Edith's character, or was it already created that way? Like, was her character and the adjectives used to describe her character when you, you know, met her per se, or was it all, did you develop everything?
I think that the character was developed before I came into it. So she was always this mischievous, troublemaking girl that was always on the page. But I think that you bring yourself into every role, and, you know, my intonation, the sassy parts of my voice definitely helped create who she is. And I would say, like, there are some things, like, you know, that they liked that I did. Like, we have this joke that I can do this little girl scream, which is like super, super high pitched scream. And so they're like, okay, now we need one of these. And so, you know, they know the things that I can do, and they use my strengths and everything like that and skills.
That's great. They knew the arsenal that's in your arsenal. When you were in the booth and you couldn't react to the other actors, how did you find those different emotions? We touched on that just a little bit, but it is fascinating. Like, right. You know, like Eddie Izzard at LA Studios put a trash can over his head during one of our recording sessions for The Wild because he's supposed to be underground, trapped, and couldn't get out. And I thought that is the most genius. Plus, he licked an envelope. He was a cat in Rock Dog. I've put him in two movies, and I'm enamored with Eddie Izzard. And if your kids don't know who he is, please Google. He was a cat, and he had to lick an envelope, and it was like brilliant. He picked up an envelope at the recording studio and actually went. So how did you do it? How did you find your different emotions?
So one thing that's really, really great is that I'm Skyping with the directors from Paris, and or the writers are in the room. And they kind of just tell me about what's going on in the scene before. So I have a second to sit with it before I do it. I will say though, like for instance, what you were mentioning with Eddie, like there are some sound effects that just feel like they can't be replicated. Like there was this one I remember in the third movie where I was supposed to be coming up out of water and like spit out water, like puh, and like I really couldn't do it. And I was like, we were just laughing over like over Skype because he was like, no, it's more like, bleh. And I was like, bleh. Like, and I was like, I just sound like I'm throwing up. Like, what's going on?
And you do have to make those sounds. Here's a good one. You know, after submitting your voiceover role, how long does it take, you know, till you book the job? I would say it's case by case by case, you know,
you know,
a commercial audition, you can hear, you know, that afternoon, but other ones take 7 months with The Princess and the Frog. If you've read the animation chapter in Confessions of a Casting Director, 7 months before Anika Noni Rose found out that she got the role. And even though, as I always like to say, she was the very first actor I brought in, and I knew deep down 2 a.m. that she was the right voice, still took 7 months.
That's so funny. I feel like that's often the case too in casting. Like a lot of times they'll walk in the first week, but not everyone is quite sure yet.
Right. And you certainly can't shove your opinion down anybody's throat in casting because they will tell you to be quiet, even though I kind of did that with Saul Blinkoff on that Amazon project. Okay, this is a big one, you know, and I have an opinion about this as well. How do you know when you're ready to invest in an animation demo? I have an opinion, but I want to hear yours first.
I would just say, for me, like my animation demo is really just my Despicable Me stuff. I don't know. I mean, I think that you're better suited to answer this question than I am, especially because I haven't worked in casting for animation that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really expensive, and I would urge everybody to take a look at those backstage columns I used to write called Speakeasy, because my last interview was with Anthony Mendez, who's the narrator for Jane the Virgin. And he said to me in this interview, boy, Jen, if I could speak to my younger self, I would have told myself to wait 5 years before I invested in this voiceover demo because it was expensive. I wasn't ready. It was expensive. I wasn't ready. And so I feel like it's this catch-22. People feel like I can't get a voiceover agent unless I have a demo. And then I don't want to have a demo until I'm ready to do one. Nowadays, obviously, everyone's working from home. You could potentially put a few things down, you know, with your microphone. I have this, you know, my big one. I've got my one for my phone. But it's not something to rush into at all, I don't think. And how do you get a voiceover agent? It's the same thing, kind of what Dana was saying. You know, it's sort of like you got to connect and meet people and get referrals, recommendations. Your sister was obviously with Abrams and Bonnie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, siblings, if a sibling is with an agent, they sometimes want to meet the other sibling. When you auditioned for Despicable Me, how did you know how to dial your acting down to make it genuine?
I feel like, I think that's so funny because I don't think that as an 11-year-old I was thinking that. I think I was just like, this is a kid, I'm a kid, how would I do this? And kids are just more animated in general, you know, they're more excitable. So I think that that just kind of helped me access that.
And I would say too, everybody who knows me well knows that I really, really, really like to cast young actors for a young actor voice role. And I'm not of the camp to, you know, put a 30-year-old woman to be like, I'm going to be a 12-year-old boy. I find that very grating. However, voices change and it really is, you know, it really is challenging when we're dealing with real kids, right? Because things happen, especially during the duration of a movie. Thankfully for the three of you girls, you were girls and, you know, everybody was able to do all of them.
Well, actually, I had to re-audition for the second two, which made sense because I was 11 and then I was 15 and then I was 20. So they just wanted to make sure that my voice could still get there. But actually for Elsie Fisher, she only did the first two movies.
Oh.
And they had to recast for the third one. Thankfully, she's had a lot of success otherwise. I'm sure she was still, you know, upset that she didn't get to do it. But the thing is, she didn't take it as personally, because when it came down to it, as much as they loved Elsie Fisher's voice and as much as they loved her, they didn't have, and it comes back to that authenticity thing that we're talking about. She wasn't a kid anymore. She was 15 now. Her playing a five-year-old sounded different than a five-year-old playing a five-year-old, because five-year-olds in reality are like, they just have this childlike, they're just children, you know, they're still imaginative and bright and everything like that. And so things come out differently or sound differently when you're reading words off of a page, and you'll say different things just because you're a kid and you're sillier.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's a good story to share that they couldn't, keep her. Right. And, yeah. It was the right thing to do for the project. Probably a heartbreaking thing, I would imagine, to experience as a child actor getting replaced. But you also have to understand, when we are doing the replacing, it's actually usually not about you. It's about so many other external circumstances, like a voice changing, like, you know, a complete redirection of the character, all these different things. The important thing is that I'm sure they called her personally and told her what was going on, and, you know, hard. How did you get the best take the first time? So when I teach these classes, Dana, and we should have you come be a guest, give some feedback. I'm always like, your job as the actor, like, how do you get to that great first take the first time if you're in an audition and they may not give you a second or third time? So are you doing vocal warm-ups ahead of time? I mean, you're probably recording a bunch of at home, you know, VO stuff. Like, what do you do?
So for my voice specifically, I feel like I wake up and like it's different in the morning every single day. So specifically for Despicable Me, they're in Paris, the directors. So my sessions here are at like 10 a.m., 11 a.m. But in New York, they were at like 7 or 8 a.m. And so I will literally wake up and the first thing I'll do is just start talking. Like, I'll just start talking to my mom, who was ever in the room, just to kind of get my voice going. So that's something that I definitely do.
Yeah, I always say to people, you have got to do all of that ahead of time, because when you walk into that recording studio, and I've worked with Luke Wilson, Owen Wilson, Steve Martin, Woody Harrelson, like, they walk in and they're like, all right, let's go. They're like ready to go. Kiefer Sutherland is not doing vocal warm-ups while he eats his In-N-Out burger. He is like, let's do it. I'm ready. And so same with Whoopi Goldberg. She voiced something for me too. She walked in, they said, Whoopi, do you want to see the animation with your voice cut to picture? And she said, nope, I don't want to see it at all. I just want to come in and do the work. I don't want to get something in my head based on what I just saw with the animation. I thought that was really interesting, because they found that it was going to, distract. She felt they would distract her performance or make it a bit self-conscious. So I think every voice actor has a completely different approach, and other people love to see their voices cut to picture and see what that's like. So I think it depends, you know, but now of course you've been used to it. So it's not going to be such a crazy thing. All right. So we're starting to wrap up. What age is too early to start VO? Well, I'll answer this one first. I mean, I think, you know, Elsie was five, but I think that has to be a specific reason to have a five-year-old. We had a five-year-old girl playing Cottontail and Peter Rabbit for Nick Jr. And I have to say, having a five-year-old is different than working with a nine-year-old who sounds like she's five. So, you know, I'm all for being a really super duper reader, being such a good, smart little reader, and that will help get yourself going in the voiceover world. What else do you think, Dana?
I remember hearing that Boo in Monsters, Inc. was like two or something like that, and they had to chase her around to get those sounds. And of course, those sounds were like golden.
Yep.
But I heard that was really difficult. I think that voiceover requires a certain kind of just like stability, and like you're standing there for a long time, you're on your feet, you're just like ripping through those sides. So I do think that it's probably a little better to be older than younger in those situations.
Yes. I worked on a show. It's coming out soon on Nickelodeon, and I can't say the name because it's not been announced publicly. Same with my Netflix show. And God, the executive producer wanted a seven-year-old boy, a seven-year-old boy, a seven-year-old boy. And, you know, so we tried some out, and, you know, seven-year-old boys got like a short attention span. Like a nine-year-old is a little bit of a better one. But they're kids. it's hard. You're making somebody stand there with headphones on and act in place. I mean, it's difficult for anybody. And we haven't even talked about ADR. Can you tell us quickly what ADR is?
ADR is when they've already done the animation and they just need you to come in and do the voiceover to match the animation already. So instead of that, you coming in and doing the voiceover first and then matching the animation to you, it's the other way around, which is very difficult because it has to do with all these beeps in your ear and like the timing of things working out. You'll get the line before and it'll go beep, beep, beep. And then you have to say it exactly with the beat and the rhythm that it comes out of the character's mouth on the screen. So that's something that's really, really difficult for sure. I've had to do it not even just for voiceover, but also for On My Block.
Yeah.
And it always feels weird because you're like, it's like 3, 2, 1, and then you have to say it.
Yeah.
And it comes out however it comes out.
It's really, really tedious. And yet it has to be precise because this is the end of the movie, right? We're almost done with our production process. We're almost going to be done with the movie and we need a couple of final things. And you know, you've got to come in and do them. Somebody was asking about if you don't have an at-home professional studio, can you still book work? I think you absolutely can. I have talked before and I'll put the links in when I make this a podcast to the Shure microphone that plugs into the iPhone and several of Lauren Sass and other folks on this Zoom who've been taking my classes have been doing that. And I think that you still can, because even with just a regular phone recording, we can hear what we need to hear to further explore, right? For callbacks. So what's up for you next, Dana, once this pandemic is over and we can all get back outside? Do you want to work in casting? Do you want to be a voice director? Are you going to write screenplays?
Well, I think that I've been using this time to kind of just try and be productive. So I've been writing a little bit, whether that's just for my own fun or for something that I actually want to put out there someday, who knows. But also I've just been, you know, I've been watching more television shows and more film and everything like that. I always think it's great to like know what's out there. I can't wait to get back to auditioning. I've been doing voiceover auditions here, which is a lot of fun. I love working in casting, and right now it's this great fit in my life where I can still work in casting and audition, and it works out really well, and I hope I can continue to do that.
Yeah, with the flexibility. I will say for everybody out there, we are all watching a lot of television, Netflix, et cetera. I am currently on episode 4 of Little Fires Everywhere, which has some phenomenal actors. I'm actually enjoying it even more than the book. And of course, I have to do my plug for The Fosters and Good Trouble, the spinoff. Really juicy, fun stuff. Here's the thing, everybody. Next time you're watching an animated movie, whether it's Despicable Me or if you're watching, any show on Netflix, whatever you're watching, really think about the actors. What are they doing? What actions are they playing? What can we learn from them? Because while we are all watching a lot more content than usual, because we have some time, try to use it as an acting exercise, right? Observing their behavior. What is it about these people on TV that keeps us watching? Or conversely, with the animated movies like Dana's been in, what is it that keeps me listening? What brings me into the story of Despicable Me with these girls and Steve Carell? I also should note that my niece at the time was so obsessed with Despicable Me. It was absolutely unreal. And I think you did sign something for her at one point. I think you signed something and she was like, now she's 20. But she was like, absolutely. Or maybe you recorded something for her. So thank you, Dana, for making her happy. She was like blown away by that. But yeah, everybody, so try to be using your time as productively, Dana said, as possible. We will meet again on June 17th, 2 weeks from today. Please feel free to email me any topics you would like covered. And final advice, Dana, to all the young actors and their parents who are here. Oh boy.
I would just say, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons, that you love it. And the second that you stop loving it, you have to recognize that too. And it's just, you know, be very self-aware during the process of becoming an actor and make sure that you're keeping who you are while you're also playing these other roles. You know?
Yes, that is really something. We've talked, my mother was a guest, Dana, on the show, and she talked about, you know, when she was schlepping me around in the 1980s to my auditions, and she did say, she's like, make sure it's for them, not you, because it's, there is nothing in it for the parents other than for me anyway. watching them sit around a lot and wait and be, you know, and be an advocate for their child, but your child has to love to do it. Otherwise, please go play soccer. Please go play baseball. Please do that, because you'll have a guarantee games. Somebody will win, somebody will lose. There will be a score, and there is much more rhyme and reason to sports than there is to this business. So Dana, where can all these young actors find you and follow you? Are you active on social media?
I am active on social media. My social media is just my first name and my last name, DanaGaier. And I'm on Instagram and Twitter, and I just made a TikTok, but I don't really know how it works yet. And I still haven't posted anything, but I'm on there. And I have a Facebook page and website, and it's really all Dana Gaier. So yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you, Dana. I hope stay safe in LA, and we're staying safe here in New York. And everybody, thank you so much for attending. And I hope to see you next time I'm out there. I was just out there in March, just before everything fell apart. But I hope to see you again. And folks, be in touch, stay safe. And like I said, email me topics to discuss. We are going to talk about social media in one of our conversations. And Dana, say hi to your whole family for me. I hope we answered everybody's questions. Everybody take care. Thank you so much. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
For more episodes of Confessions of a Casting Director, go to jenrudencasting.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast fix. And please subscribe, rate, and review, and tell your friends about our show. We've got a bunch of fun online classes for young actors in voiceover and animation, TV acting analysis, and monologues at reduced prices during the pandemic. So you can check them out and sign up at jenrudencasting.com/classes-coaching. And if you love this show as much as I love doing it, please consider supporting us with a contribution to keep our show going. You can contribute at jenrudencasting.com/podcast and support us through Patreon or PayPal. Thanks for listening.